This meeting is now being recorded.
Welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the sub-team for Sunrise Data Review call on the 6th of February, 2019. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? All right, hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and I'll just note we have a couple of unidentified numbers, one ending in 9333, one ending in 7518. If you're in the chat room and you can type in and identify yourselves, we appreciate it. So just to quickly run through the agenda, we will start with statements of interest. Then we will go into the brief discussion of comments. And this first item, the Sunrise questions already discussed, I think we had actually covered that. So we're actually going to then go into, I'm thinking there's an error here. We're going to go into the analysis of the data sources on previously collected data. And then we're going to go into, against all of the questions here. You can see we have quite a bit here. And we will focus on just the new input received, which when we bring up the documents will be in green, and then we'll move to any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business? And George Kirikos, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Kirikos. This isn't going to be a surprise for anybody who's on the first call, but obviously we need to talk about extreme workload and also what is the current work plan. This past week we were assigned 25 or 27 pages of homework, which was reasonable. I was able to do it under 4 hours. We have about 250 plus more pages remaining, and according to the work plan, which some say is a proposed work plan, others, you know, say that it's work in progress. It's unclear what actually is the work plan, so identifying what actually is the binding work plan would be useful. We're supposed to be finished by next week, and I don't see, you know, more than myself, Kathy, Christine, and Griffin actually trying to fill out this Google Doc. And I'm not going to be a slave doing 250 pages worth of work, which will take 20-plus hours over the next week. So we should talk about what is a realistic work plan and let the co-chairs and the, you know, sub-team chairs know what is reasonable and what can be done and adjust that timeline. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. And seeing no other hands up, I'll just go to the first item on the agenda, which is updates to statements of interest. Does anybody have any updates? Brian, you have your hand up. Brian Beckham, please.
Just want to check first, Joy, that you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Okay, thanks. I wanted to just respond briefly to George's comment. I don't think it's worth getting into too much. The request for readjusting the timelines and looking at the workload has been certainly noted and is being discussed amongst the co-chairs and the sub-team co-chairs. Just wanted to give by way of kind of parallel to the RS subteams, which I don't think, George, you participated on. And certainly it wasn't the same workload, but there was a lot of work going on. I know I was listening in on and participating in a lot of the calls, and there were a tremendous amount of calls going on in rapid succession and a lot of work going on. I think just to kind of bear in mind, and I don't mean to dismiss the concern about the workload, but I think almost by definition, farming the workout into subteams means juggling a little bit more. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of context that, you know, I think that there's some kind of an expectation that moving work into subteams means that there's a little bit more heavy lifting going on, and then that's taken back to the full working group. So thanks.
Thank you very much, Brian. I didn't get any updates to statements of interest. I didn't note any. Then let me go ahead and turn things over to Greg Shatton to continue on to agenda item 2, which is to move into the analysis of the data sources and collected data, but first I see a hand up from Kathy Kleinman. Kathy, please.
Yeah, and apologies, this is Kathy, apologies to people who were for crossing over into the trademark claims session that met just before, but I've heard several different things about the homework for next week, and it seems like a good time to discuss it. There's three or four major documents left, and there's some question about whether we're going to do all of them or whether we just want to do the next two documents on our list, which is the INTA survey. I think we're looking at two sets of slides, as well as the analysis group's original report that we got when we started the working group, and then they updated it. So we're looking at the updated one of 2017. If you look collectively at those, but it's a slide, so it's big print, slides for the INTA, it's the summaries that they present that I think Lori presented to us in a meeting. It's about 163 pages. If we're going to go all the way through the last documents, I think Greg at one point said it's, in a different discussion, said it's 250 pages. You know, it might be worth asking what the expectation is for next week, because I'd say agree 250 pages is way too much. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. And let me go ahead and defer to Greg Shatton as one of the sub-team co-chairs. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg Shatton. I thought we were going to bump this over to AOB, but I would say that typically we've decided after each call what the homework would be for the next call. You know, workload issues are heard loud and clear, and I went through all of the resources yesterday and looked at, you know, both number of pages and kind of, you know, density of information to try to figure out what makes sense. So I think there's, you know, at this point, the homework, you know, is not yet assigned for next week. My personal view is it's not going to be all 250 pages. And that, because that would be silly. And then we have to figure out how to deal with that with our timeline and overall workload. So, you know, but as I said, it's been our method to assign the homework after each session, you know, part based on what took place in each session, and also, you know, taking a look at what we have ahead of us. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Greg. And then let me go to start up the discussion of the data sources versus the charter questions, and staff is pulling up the relevant first document right now.
Thanks. Kathy, is that a new hand or an old hand? Old hand. So now we have in front of us the first document. So it would be the preamble charter question. Is that where we're at? Or are we at question 11? I'm looking at the agenda on the side here, and I'm a little perplexed myself.
Oh, thank you, Greg. We're just checking that out now. I think perhaps that the incorrect agenda is up, and I think we should be taking off from where we left off last week. And I'm just checking now with staff. I think you're correct that is question 11. But in the meantime, I see as we're checking on this for you, George Kirikos, you have your hand up.
George, maybe I can be of help. Greg wasn't here last week, but what happened was that the homework assignment was changed last Tuesday to documents, and nobody actually even attempted doing that. So it was agreed to go back to do the first four questions this week. So we really haven't started, to be honest. Like, last week was a complete disaster, if anybody wants to look at the recording. So we haven't really done anything. Thanks.
Thank you, George. And yes, based on staff's just quick check, you are correct. We are going back to the beginning, and so the preamble charter question is correct.
Very good. Okay. Well, then here we are. Just quickly, so we remember what the Sunrise Preamble Charter question is, and it's in subparts. A, is the Sunrise period serving its intended purpose? B, is it having unintended effects? C, is the TMCA provider requiring appropriate forms of use? And if not, how can this be corrected? Have abuses of the Sunrise period been documented by trademark owners, by trademark, by registrants, or by registries and registrars? So that's the refresher there. And I think with that, we can leap directly into the questions themselves. So I think, George, you had the first submission. So if you want to talk to that, no point in me reading what you wrote. It's probably better if you read what you wrote or some, you know, variation on that. Thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, George Burkus here. I kind of talked about this in the mailing list, but I think it's very bad to simply read what's on the screen. I assume everybody has read this before this call. So I'm happy to answer questions on people that people, you know, have a question about something I've already written. But this should, you know, be prep time. You know, people should have read all this before the call and be able to have an interaction rather than just simply reading what's on the screen. I did note in the new green text something that I pointed out last week, but everything else, you know, people should already be aware of. Thank you.
Thanks, George. I did note that. However, I think we need to just until we institute a different style, need to do something to catch up. You know, or is this Vassar, the University of Chicago? I don't know. In one place, they go over the homework, and the other one, they expect that you already did all the work, and, you know, if you didn't, you're a fool. So both are valid. So what we have here initially is an identification of the page 1 and 2 of the registry operator responses with stats showing kind of the number of sunrises per TLD. Various different ones of the sunrises. And as well discussion of which records are and are not sunrise eligible, with the vast majority being eligible, implying that Deloitte is accepting the proof of use 96% of the time. I'm not sure that conclusion makes sense, but or is correct. But we don't know whether for those active TMCH records, whether proof of use was submitted or not. And then we have, you know, statement in question 20, regarding that there have not been any formal TMCH disputes from third parties on trademark records. And then the data, you know, showing that the, again, the 4% figure, I think, although that seems to be unsuccessful versus successful, so maybe those are instances where, in fact, proof of use was not accepted, as opposed to was not submitted in the first place. And moving on in the same cell, and I think you know, this is previous stuff, so I'll move quickly through it and get to the green stuff, which is new. There's more stuff that we've discussed in the past regarding gaming. And then there's a discussion here about something from trademark use. That's not data from our previously collected sources, so that's, I guess, a gloss on the issue and question of whether certain marks in the database you know, are not validly registered. And if we have data that goes directly to that, it would be helpful. I don't know if anybody's identified any such data. Who is next in line? I do not have them come up in the right order on the tablet.
Yes, thank you, Julie Hedlund from staff. So the order is George, Griffin, and then Kathy.
Wow, it's alphabetical order. So that is the way it comes up on my tablet. Wonderful. Thank you. George, please go ahead.
George here. It just happened to be alphabetical, but I was on top because I was first. You, at the beginning of what you were saying, you said, you know, there's two different styles of approaching this. One, you know, you assume that everybody's read it in advance and prepared to discuss. The other is that people come unprepared and you have to reread everything. And then you just went into the approach where you assume that nobody has read anything in advance, but people are saying this for the first time. Why don't we just take 5 minutes and say how people want to proceed with all the future subteam calls? Are we to assume that nobody has read anything in advance? Or are we to assume that people have spent an hour to get the document, to read the documents and are prepared to actually discuss them so you don't have to reread them? In which case, you know, your job is much easier because everybody would have read it already and just have to talk about the areas and where people have different opinions and want to reconcile. I think that approach where people come prepared is obviously much better for you, much better, I think, for the working group because, you know, you don't have to read what's on the screen. It's, you know, focused on interactivity, which I think is the goal of meetings because, you know, and so I don't know how other people feel, but, you know, I spend 90 minutes to 2 hours preparing before the calls and I'm ready to discuss differences. I would hope that other people are doing the same thing, but I can't speak for everybody. So maybe people should, you know, use that little marker to say how they want the meetings to proceed, you know, assume that nobody has read anything or assume that everybody has already read everything and are prepared to discuss. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Griffin?
Thanks, Greg. This is Griffin for the record. Just to reiterate what I said in chat on the point of George's question, I think it's just taking up more time discussing that issue than to just level set by reading what's there. But in order to not take up any more time on that issue, my hand was raised in order to try and walk through or at least briefly summarize the input that I intend to submit on the preamble question, and again, apologies for not having the opportunity to actually submit it before this call, before the document was locked. I need to get my internal deadlines squared away, apparently, so that I do that more consistently. But I tend to agree with some of the data that George had highlighted in connection with the registry operator responses on this question, which basically summarized how many Sunrise registrations they received in their particular TLDs. I thought that was relevant to answering this question. I also wanted to note the point that Donuts made in their response that said that they did have a handful of registrants wanting to participate in Sunrise, but they were not able to get their SMD file in time. Again, without commenting on necessarily what we can infer or what the meaning of that may be, I think it is relevant in terms of the data here going to the first subpart of this question, which is whether Sunrise period is serving its intended purpose. And then I also thought that there was some relevant data for this question from the first set of Deloitte responses that we looked at. In particular, in the event that a specific trademark record does not meet the requirements, the trademark record will not receive any services, such as Sunrise services or trademark claim services, and receives the status invalid. Again, I think that goes to show just kind of, you know, how the Sunrise, you know, system is working, whether it's meeting sort of in its intended operational kind of requirements in terms of, you know, being granted the ability to use the service. The other thing I wanted to point out from those responses was the number of invalid trademark records is on average 8% of the total number of mark records submitted to the clearinghouse. Again, I think that goes towards a similar point. And again, the other data point there, at this moment, an average of 4% of the active TMCH records are not Sunrise eligible. We have not received any complaints regarding the Sunrise eligibility requirements in our verification process. So again, I think that goes to how Sunrise is working. And again, you know, I'm not getting to the point yet of you know, trying to suggest one response or outcome that we might be able to draw from this data, but just to highlight that, you know, these are some data elements that might be useful in answering this question. I also thought there was some useful data from the 2013 to 2017 report that we looked at. Again, it's mostly in the nature of summarizing how many records were verified and very just kind of basic statistical data about what is in the clearinghouse and how many records have been successfully verified for SunRed's eligibility. Again, that just speaks to, you know, the efficacy of kind of operationally how SunRed's validation is going, which I think is, again, relevant here. And then finally, in the follow-up responses from Deloitte, they note that when a trademark holder informs the TMCH that a mark has been canceled, the mark will be deactivated and the SunRed and claim services will be canceled within 24 hours. So, again, I think that speaks or is relevant to the question of, you know, kind of operationally how SunRed is working, at least in connection with sort of, you know, eligibility and whether something that is no longer eligible or should no longer be qualified for SunRed service is being, you know, deactivated so that it can't be. I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Griffin. I think that brings us to Kathy.
Yeah. This is Kathy Clemon, and I'm going to be speaking to some text that is not green because I was not here last week. I apologize. Had a meeting with the Director of Innovation of New Jersey, and it ran over because it was a great discussion. So I would like to speak to that. But briefly, I'd like to recommend that this preamble question be put last instead of first. It's an umbrella question that would be much better served once we've gone through the detailed questions. So I'd like to put that recommendation on the table that we deal with it last in the future instead of first as we deal with new documents. But that said, I thought the four documents this week were interesting and shed light on the preamble question. So we had the two documents from Deloitte, questions and follow-up questions. We had Deloitte's Trademark Clearinghouse Report 2013 to 2017, and a compilation of three registry responses from 2016. So I thought in terms of data that that they did shed light on A and B, is the SunRed period serving its intended purpose, and is it having unintended effects? So here I'm referring to some of my questions on page 5, that there are unintended effects because the Trademark Clearinghouse is secret. We can't see what's in it, so no wonder there's no SDRP or any other kinds of disputes, except for very limited circumstances, because half the people who are intended to use it can't access the data. So we're going to see. So, but we have the data here, and it's clearly in these comments because Deloitte was very candid with us. Great. We also
Kathy, one second, please. You have the actual data, because right now we're really just the primary purpose here is to identify specifically where the data is so that we can then refer to it when making recommendations. And that now is not the time to primarily debate what the recommendations are. And I don't see, at least what I'm looking at, I don't see this in the source name and page slide reference column. If I'm looking correctly at what you have here, I don't see any actual sources. Is that correct? Or
No, I must have found them here and not put them in. So I will add that. Assuming this document remains open, those references will be added.
So the document will be reopened. So maybe it's better to talk about these after you have the actual sources so that we can look at the underlying data.
Okay.
Because that's
the
purpose here is the data.
Well, if there was data, I wouldn't have put it in. So
And when we can have that data in front of us, because none of us now can take a look at the data you're citing to. So it doesn't make the discussion
Well, the second
useful.
One, the low rates of registration in SunRed is very clearly in the fourth document, the compilation of registry responses.
Can you tell me where? If not, I think we need to move
compilation
on.
Compilation of registry responses to questions.
I know what date, I know what document you're talking about. We need to know where in the document. It doesn't help to cite an entire
question
document.
Question A. PIR says they've only had 35 registrations for each TLD during its respective SunRed. Quote, donuts, we register 125 SunRed names per TLD on average. AFNIC was the one that was of great interest in that Paris, in part because they had a follow-up SunRed period for local, what appears to be for local Parisian mark holders, and an LRP. So So we're seeing low rates of sunrise, and what does that mean? Is the sunrise serving its intended purpose? There are low rates of use. The third thing is, and I do reference it, donuts. In the same document, the compilation of registry responses, donuts, in a question, these are very poorly labeled, actually, in page 3B, questions for GTLDs offering blocking mechanism services, and donuts is very clear about the use of the SMD file to facilitate its globally protected marks list, which is and so that's very important to know and to see whether that fits into the balances of the types of whether that helps sunrise. So if you're in sunrise and yet you're registering a mark that's already been blocked, what does that mean? Would sunrise be serving its intended purpose in that case? That's just one example of questions that are brought up under this preamble charter question pursuant to data that we've been given in these four documents. Thank you, Greg. Back to you.
Kathy, I think I'm seeing a question here about the rate of sunrise registration in the chat. See the how can a number be a rate? We need to be able to compare the center registrations to another number to have a rate or decide if it's a low rate. What is your is there data that goes to that?
Are you asking me or John?
I'm asking you because John was remarking on your depiction of things as you know, commenting on a rate and characterizing it. So I'm trying to understand how you got to that characterization from the data or otherwise.
So is a sunrise serving its intended purpose for .NGO and .ONG, which are done by the Public Interest Registry and many, many, if not most of the registrations, and there will be nonprofit organizations, which may or may not qualify as use in interstate commerce because of the non-commercial use. The low rate of registration, the low numbers, physical actual numbers, may show that if you want to talk about how we can use the data, and I was stopped from doing that in the last subteam, but if you wanted to talk about it, then rate means can refer to physical numbers. And, does this sunrise, should the public interest registry be applying it to nonprofit organizations where it doesn't really seem to fit? People didn't seem to use it. People, registrants in the trademark clearinghouse did not seem to use it. And it may, then we can link it to other data in the analysis group data, the recent analysis group data. We saw registries and registrars leaning towards, trademark claims or sunrise. And so one of the things we're looking at here, if you want to talk about it, is the sunrise period serving its intended purpose. Where the vast majority of your registrants are not trademark owners, it may not be. So that's first page of this compilation of registry responses. Thanks for the question, John. I hope I answered it. But if not, follow up.
I think we have David McCauley next. David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley speaking. Hello, everyone. I'll make this quick because it's on a process point, not on these questions. But I wanted to talk briefly to the question that George asked about assumptions. I think, and I'm speaking now as a participant, I'm not offering a decision as a co-chair. I'm speaking of an opinion I have as a participant, that it would be wrong to make assumptions. We shouldn't operate on assumptions, but I did like where the chat went to the idea of expectations. In my view, the staff has done a very good job putting out homework emails, and we could sort of maybe restate those that, there is an expectation that everyone will have read this. I actually think people are doing that. I think Maxim made a very good point earlier that the fact that a comment hasn't been entered by someone doesn't mean they haven't read it. My hat is tipped to the people that are regularly contributing, George, Kathy, Maxim, I'm forgetting people, I'm sure, but especially George with prodigious amount of work, which is very helpful to all of us. I think if we set the expectation, we don't need to worry about the assumptions. I'll use myself as a good example. I have done the homework every week until this week. I had a particularly difficult schedule this week, and I've not made it all the way through the homework. I think as a team, if we expect that we all do as best we can, we will get a lot of work done. So I'm against the idea of assumptions, like the idea of expectations, and would urge us to proceed on that basis. Thanks very much.
Thanks, David. I think that brings us to Susan Payne. Or Susan, have you taken your hand down?
I've taken it down. I don't feel I can add much to what David was just saying, so thanks.
Thanks. That takes us to Claudio.
Thanks, Greg. I just wanted to respond to, I think, a point that Kathy was making. And it's based on the fact that I typed this in the chat, that when you look at the number or how often the Sunrise procedure is used, you need to basically look across all the new GTLDs that launched. And it's really reflective of the point that trademark owners budget a certain amount of money that they have available to spend on their domain portfolio and enforcement work. And that number, what ends up happening if there are a large number of new GTLDs that are introduced, the total amount that is available to protect their brands needs to be spread across all the different GTLDs that are related to their brand in some sense, or there is a risk of registration abuse taking place. So, for example, with the PIR example, there might have been several other TLDs that, in addition to the ones that PIR launched, where the trademark owner also registered their brand through the Sunrise process and had to essentially spread out their brand protection efforts across multiple new GTLDs. And so we're going to get the wrong impression if we just look at each individual GTLD and draw conclusions based on those numbers. We really need to look across the entire universe. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudio. I see George's hand is up. Please go ahead.
George Krikos, the transcript. Yeah, I tend to agree with Kathy's viewpoint on this. I understand what Claudio is saying, but as I pointed out maybe a couple of years ago, we have seen like a 99% plus reduction in the Sunrise view, which tends to reinforce what Kathy is saying. I think one of the purposes of the UGTLD program in itself was supposed to be a huge expansion in choice. So what people are saying is, if the number of Sunrise registrations is low, is that there hasn't been this huge expansion that, you know, we were expecting to, expand it by, plus 500, where effectively we're expanding it by much less than what people are claiming. But I think that's kind of looking at it after the fact. You know, people are expecting much greater utilization rates of Sunrise. That's why they were arguing for the use of it. And I think it supports Kathy's view that, to some extent, that's failed. It's an incorrect assumption that people that were predicting that, have been proven wrong by the data. And Kathy is kind of recognizing that. And other people are trying to interpret it differently, but I think Kathy's interpretation is more supportable. Thanks.
Thanks, George. That 99% drop, is that something that was in this data or something that you've calculated or seen calculated elsewhere?
George, here, I don't think it was in this document itself. This was these four documents didn't talk to that. It was talked about on the mailing list. Thank you.
Thanks. I guess maybe when we get to the other data section of our data gathering exercise, we can find out how that's supported. Susan Payne, please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi. One minute we just seem to have a bit of an inconsistency here, because one minute we have people claiming that Sunrise is being abused. There's lots of people picking up evidence of abuse, and yet here we are with low numbers, and suddenly the Sunrise is not worthwhile and there's no need for it. Now, it can't be being abused and be unnecessary. Surely the fact, if one chose to put a different interpretation on this, and I this isn't the time for the interpretation, but everyone else is doing so. If one chose to put a different interpretation on it, it's that there are relatively modest numbers of Sunrise registrations, and therefore it's not an abuse. It's not being abused by brand owners. It's being used in a very kind of targeted and responsible manner, something that I think a week or two ago, brand owners were being accused of being incredibly irresponsible. So, I think let's not just make assumptions based on three registries data. Claudia made a very good point that we have to look at all the data we've got, not just one lot of data.
Thank you, Susan. A follow-up question, and again, maybe we're not supposed to be analyzing data, but once we get kind of halfway down the road, can you explain the basis for your conclusion that a low rate of sunrise kind of leads to the conclusion that there's a lack of abuse, you know, without looking at the particular registrations that are being used to register in sunrise? I'm not sure that I see how you get to that conclusion. Thanks.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, because we don't know the actual registrations, we don't have all of that information, and indeed we couldn't possibly start going through all of that. All I was trying to say was that 1 minute there are a lot of people arguing that brand owners are gaming this system to get registrations they shouldn't be getting, you know, and abusing the sunrise process for that purpose. And yet if we look at the numbers, we're now suddenly having people making the argument that there's no rise because no one's using it. So how, you know, I'm just saying, you know, how is it being abused and no one's using it?
Well, thanks, Susan. I think, you know, part of the problem is that we have data points that maybe don't actually say a lot. Off the top of my head, I'm not finding the number of total registrations in ONG and NGO, so can't, you know, conclude necessarily that there, if there is a relationship between the total number of sunrises and the total number of registrations, whether that's even a useful ratio, and if that is a useful ratio, does that indicate that the rate is low, medium, or high? And of course, I think people's total expectations about registrations in new GTLDs have not been met. So this, you know, perhaps could be a further part of that. So I think what would be helpful is to try to, if we're interpreting data that assumes other data or the assumptions or statements that are being made, you know, are empirical, something is high, something is low, something's abused, I think we need to try to look for specific data that can show an abusive registration in the TMCH or a low or a high rate of registration. That'll be much more helpful in terms of using the data. Not sure if George or Kathy is next, but I assume if one of them is looking at a computer rather than a tablet, they will know who's next.
George Grickles for the transcript. I'm first. Just to go to Susan's point, how you can have a low number of registrations but also have high abuse. Well, the low number of registrations is based on the absolute value. So the data we saw was donuts registered 125 sunrise names on average, AFNIC registered 796.paris. Generally, they're all relatively low number absolute sense compared to past sunrises. Now, when we talk about how we can have abuse that's significant, well, we know the hotels, all those kind of marks that are questionable that probably had token use, de minimis. Had there been 10,000 sunrise registrations, that would represent only, you know, a small proportion of those sunrise registrations. And we could say that the legitimate sunrise, the legitimate users of sunrise, the benefits to them were substantial, and then the cost on other parties was less. But when we see these less legitimate marks, they represent a higher proportion of the actual sunrise registrations. And so on a relative basis, the abusive ones become more visible relative to the rest. So I think that's the point we're trying to make, that you can have, you know, abuse, even with a low number of abuses that are significant, when you have a relatively low number of sunrise registrations in total. And so that's why, well, we can talk about what that leads one to conclusions later, but I want to point out that. Thank you.
And Greg, this is Julie Hebben from staff. Let me, if you don't mind my interruption, we're getting some requests in the chat, and I'm not sure if you're able to see the chat, that we move off of this particular point and perhaps move on to the next charter question. Obviously, people will open up the document again for any additional comments people want to add to the preamble charter question.
Greg, it's Kathy. I'm in the queue.
Yeah, Kathy, go ahead, but I do agree with what Julie said and the people in the chat. Go ahead.
Well, it was my chat, but it was my recommendation that we actually return to the preamble later. Again, it's a broad umbrella question. After you know, we look at the detailed questions, I'd actually like to recommend that we come back and discuss this, not just put comments into the document, but come back and discuss it, because this is really important. Susan pointed out to me the comment in the doc from Michael that low rates of registration Sunrise, he said, does this suggest that trademark owners do not need this service because they are not choosing to take advantage of it? So I thought I'd respond rather than typing, it's not binary. That's my sense here, is that we're looking at the data and that we should be looking at the data. So there is evidence of abuse. There is evidence in some cases of low rates of registration in DTLDs to which the Sunrise may not apply. It may not be a binary question of Sunrise or no Sunrise across all new DTLDs, but Sunrise or no Sunrise in certain DTLDs. But the data is suggesting that some it's much more successful than others, and also there is data of abuse. So not a binary choice at all. Thanks, back to you.
Thanks, Kathy. I think maybe you misunderstood which chat people were commenting about. I think people were commenting on the desire to get back to discussing the isolation and identification of data rather than the analysis and advocacy portion of our work. So I'd like to move on, unless there's anything else in this in the survey tool for this particular item, then we should move on to the next question. Brian, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I just wanted to make an observation, and feel free to take this for whatever it's worth, everyone. So I think the test that's in front of us is identifying data, and it sounds like a lot of that has already been done. We've heard a lot about rates of Sunrise and so on, and then we've started to sort of steer into discussing the substance of what that means, depending on your shape of that data. So I wanted to suggest that it may be, and this is a comment made in light of the concerns about timelines and homework, et cetera. It seems to me we have a fairly comprehensive set of data in front of us, and people already have pretty strongly held views on what that means. So it feels that we're already in a position to start seeking proposals and solutions. Sorry for the difficulties on audio. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It feels that way to an extent, but I think we're still jumping the gun. I think we'll get to the discussion of analysis and positions and conclusions more quickly if we can just stick narrowly to the question of whether we have questions about the data. And I'm beginning to feel more sympathetic to George's suggestion in terms of how we do this part of the call. So I guess the question is here, we have, I don't see anything in green, but I'm not sure if that means staff that there's anything. There's just a new brief comment. That some stats in answer to question 16 of January 2017 document are also relevant, and a couple of new references were added. So I guess that's all that's new here. There's no real reason to discuss this question. We can move on to the next one, unless there's other data, or I don't know, Griffin, if you had other things for this one that you didn't put into the doc.
Hi, Greg. This is Griffin. Just a comment quickly. So when you're are you talking about the preamble question still or question one?
Question one.
Yeah. In that case, I would just note that I will input just one point, which was drawn from the Deloitte report discussing the number of abused labels that have been added. And just to note that those abused labels are non-exact matches of marks in the TMCH, and so that speaks to the issue of whether availability of Sunrise for identical matches should be reviewed. That's the only other relevant data point that I identified that might lead to these questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Griffin. So I think we can move on to question two then.
Wait a second. I wanted to comment. This is Kathy.
Yes, is there something about the data gathering itself?
Yeah, I put things into the document. Can we go back to it? Thank you. And so, you know, several things. One of too many questions in my head. So should the availability of registrations, should the availability of Centauri's registrations only for identical matches be reviewed? And so what we have is some questions that indicate the ability of the Trademark Clearinghouse of Deloitte to actually go the other way and go farther, where you can have both identical matches and look at the use of the trademark, the categories of goods and services to which a trademark is registered, so that we may be able to go farther and have a sunrise for .bank that's narrowed so it can be both an identical match and a bank. And it looks like the question 17 of the December 5th, 2016 Deloitte questions indicated that was a capability that was available in the database, which I thought was really interesting. Also, deep in the questionnaire, question 15, same document, Deloitte wrote, we have not received any complaints regarding the Sunrise eligibility requirements in our verification process. And I just wanted to note that's because you can't see it. So that clearly, you know, so they're answering the question of kind of can you use the rules and saying, you know, no, we're not, nobody's using them. So it's data confirming that there's kind of a lack of an ability to monitor what's going on here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Let's move on to question two. Yeah. Let's see, is there a hand up? Brian, is that a new hand? His hand is gone. Okay. So here, I guess, did we discuss any of the data on this one last week? George, your hand is up.
Yeah, let me help you, George. Greg. George Rakos, the transcript. Initially, we were assigned all the questions for a subset of the charter questions. Sorry, all the documents for a subset of the charter questions. But I quickly realized that it was far too much, and I posted on the mailing list that, you know, I'd done documents 1 through 4 and then, you know, had used up so much time, and Christine and Griffin also kind of realized that it was too much, and Kathy also chimed in. So we kind of semi-agreed that we should limit ourselves only to the first 4 documents. So some of us had this done for last week. That's why it's in black, because it hasn't changed since last week. But then last Tuesday, the co-chairs of the sub-team said that we should focus on the INTA document and some other document, which none of us ended up looking at all. And so there's no input for that. We basically gave up and said, you know, go back and do questions 1 through 4. So even though it's black, we didn't really cover all these last time, and people were supposed to do it for this week. Thanks.
Got it. So I think in that case, then some of the things that are black are still kind of new input. But I guess, again, rather than going over the input, the question is whether there's any – so we've identified, you know, a certain amount of data that appears to answer this question here. And so that's all we – and unless there's a reason – if anybody has any additional data on this, they could supply it. But I've come to agree with George that, you know, if what we're doing here is identifying the data, and then we'll come back and discuss how we make recommendations and advocacy and all yada yada from the data, there's no point in kind of reading the submission We just assume that it's germane, or that when we get to it later, we may find it's not germane. So I would suggest we move on to the next question. Here we have, that was rather pithy. In for Sunrise question three, no, at least for the first four documents, and as we get to the remaining documents, this may change. So we can go to the next question. So we're up to Q4. Here we can take a moment to note what Q4 is about, and then we have data here that at least, you know, arguably goes to Q4 that's been submitted by George, and only by George. So I think we can move on from this. Question five. Question five, similarly pithy, no, not yet. So move on to question six, or at least five, B or whatever. Five B, a little more meat here on the bone. George found nothing. Kathy identified some, again, we don't have a section of their response, so it'd be good if you could put in the where in the compilation of registry responses you found pertinent data so that we can all use that data for our discussions later. But that can just be added to the document when it's opened up again. That seems to be all that's here.
I don't know if you can see it. My hand is raised, Kathy.
Oh, yeah, I see your hand is raised. Which section does this come from?
It comes
in the compilation?
It comes from A, page one.
Okay. That's all we really need to know now.
No, I don't think so. May I?
Yes, if it tells us why this, I think all at this point we're trying to identify data, so I think we've succeeded.
May
have
I?
We not?
Yeah. I'd like to explain it so that people see it. Okay, because I went to the University of Chicago and I transferred out because I didn't like their way of approaching things. Went to Harvard instead. So let me give this a try, if I might. We've got the question, because we were dealing with the preamble and we dove into it. We have the Sunrise Charter question 5B. In light of evidence gathered above, should the Sunrise period continue to be mandatory or optional? And here we have data that says that PIR and donors shared that they had low levels of Sunrise registration. Now, of course, we should combine this with whatever we found in the analysis group survey of registries and registrars where we had a slightly, you know, larger number, not huge, but large number. And so, again, we're looking at PIR telling us 35 registrations each for .ngo and .ong. So, you know, so again, this runs directly, you know, this could be data that runs directly to the question. And you know, it had been characterized one way when we're looking at the preamble, but here it's phrased another way. It's a charter question. Should this continue to be mandatory or become optional? And we have data leaning into it and helping us look at it. So I just wanted to express that because, this is very small print. Thanks.
Thanks. And I guess when we look back at the data, we'll see if PIR actually characterized that as low in their response. But let's move on to the next question.
And excuse me. I'm sorry. This is Julie Heller from staff. We do just have 1 minute to the top of the hour.
Okay.
And we are scheduled for 6 minutes. And there was a request to extend, but we really cannot extend calls on the fly. We can consider whether or not to extend next week or for following meetings.
Yeah, well, I think we can stop here. We do have the AOB. We did discuss the somewhat the AOB at the beginning. And I think the point is that clearly looking at the timeline and the number of pages and documents left, there needs to be an adjustment made to the homework for next week and figuring out how to do that, whether it's more meetings or more weeks. And that, you know, requires a discussion with the co-chairs of the overall working group, because in a sense it's they're you know, running the train. I'm just running this particular dining car. But we do, you know, hear you, and George, and others who've noted the Augean stables that seem to be awaiting us between now and our next meeting. And I think we at least want to make the pile of what you find in the Augean stables smaller for the next meeting. And we'll need to figure out how to do that. Any further comments on that point? I would say I have no comment on the other deadlines at this point. Doesn't mean that there's no consideration being given, but that's in terms of homework management. That's my comment there, that I would not, you know, expect that you should be reading all 250 pages or whatever it is for next week.
So thank you, Juan, and thank you, Greg. It's Julie Hedman from staff. We're a minute after the top of the hour, and I see people are dropping off. Thanks all for joining, and we'll go ahead and adjourn the call. And thanks again, Greg, for chairing.
And thanks all. Bye all.
Thank you so much. Meeting has been adjourned.